Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Coverage Podcast. The coaching staff news has continued for the Browns, with offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey introduced and offensive line coach Bill Callahan replaced by Andy Dickerson. The NFL honors are tonight, with Browns players and coaches up for awards. And what promises to be a tremendous Super Bowl is set for Sunday. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. What's going on, Chud?
Scott, just getting ready for Super Bowl Sunday. Look forward to it. Are you party guy, or do you want to just kind of be able to zone in on the game and concentrate on what's said and what happens and the commercials? And, of course, I know you're going to be into the Usher concert.
You know what? I actually wind up doing a lot of, like, editing shifts for the Super Bowl because I like to focus on the game, so I don't tend to go to parties. So as long as I'm home, I'll read stuff and help out for the office, do some layout and copy editing. But I'll tell you what, Chet, I have been in a couple of, you know, how it's hard to schedule vacations, right, with this job. So I'll tell you what, one Super Bowl, I was on a cruise when I got engaged. It was the Patriots beat the Eagles. And the next day, the Browns hired Romeo Crennel. It was early on in my beat, and I think we'd booked a cruise ahead of time, so I didn't even know, hey, you got to take some time when they're going to hire a coach. One year, I was in Vegas, the Cardinals-Steelers Super Bowl, might be the greatest Super Bowl ever. I was in Vegas, and the 23 comeback, the Patriots-Falcons, my wife and I were in Key West, and I could remember sitting at the bar thinking, oh, we can leave, and then we couldn't leave, and it was again, one of the best Super Bowls ever. So it's a combination of on the road and in my house.
Yeah, I feel like I'm the same way. I mean, just throughout my career, having to work sometimes a lot on Sunday nights, so I would be at work. Now I've been kind of all over the board. I've had a couple where I've gone to parties. The last few years, I just like this week, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna work. The big thing for me is I don't have to work on Sunday. I work Monday morning,
right?
So it's just, you know, you got to be able to get up at 2:30 in the morning. So it's, you know, you just live off about 3 or 4 hours of sleep that night. But, you know, I always like being able to, you know, I find that the best case is if you can be somewhere where you can still pay attention to the game. I don't like where, you know, sometimes you go to a party and you're with a group of people and then you talk and you're BSing with people and sometimes you don't even pay attention. So
yeah,
I
I'm
always
with
find,
you.
You know, I like to be able to at least know what's going on. And I like keeping an eye on the commercials. I think that's kind of fun. So this morning, I don't know if you saw, I sent it out a retweet on Twitter from Channel 3 social media. it was fun. We made a Super Bowl dish and I made something my daughter found on social media, loaded tater tot cups. And they are awesome, man. You fill them with sour cream, bacon, green onion, cheese, and we threw pierogi on top of it. Oh man, that's the best part is the food on Super Bowl Sunday.
I was going to bring that up. It's tough for you to focus on football when everybody's talking to you about the tater tots you bring to a party.
Exactly. There you have it. So cheap plug for the morning show. Anyway, though, it's kind of been fun too. I mean, on the morning show is, you know, obviously we want the Browns to be there, but it's kind of cool with the Cleveland Heights, Kelce angle. You know, that's kind of cool. Like how he represents Cleveland Heights. And I don't know if you saw his soundbite.
Yeah.
And I just think that's always cool when, any local guys that get to the game, they rep the, CLE, I guess, to be cool and say it that way. But, yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll finish by talking about the Super Bowl, but, let's get into it. And, you know, Ken Dorsey, that's the big story. He talked on Monday, right? That was Monday now,
making sure
I don't get my days mixed up. So that will be the beef of our conversation. But I think before we get to Dorsey, I think we need to address the Callahan situation. That is something we didn't get to talk about. It did not happen in before our last pod. But Andy Dickerson, that's new news coming down the pike. My question to you is, and I go back to that press conference, and, you know, Scott, I understand – I think it's great that the Browns didn't want to step in the way of a guy wanting to go coach with his son. So I totally get that. But at the same time, man, that's a big loss. And when you're trying to get to the Super Bowl and win it, you hate to lose a guy like that.
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, I don't think they had any choice. And especially, you know, if you – because the Browns had the power to not let him go, at least for a lateral move, which is what he made, offensive line coach, the offensive line coach. But, you know, do you want a guy that's going to be, you know, grumpy all the time? And, you know, Bill Callahan's got that personality anyway. You know, if you want a guy that doesn't want to be here, right? And I think the Browns took that into consideration. I think they took the fact that it's a, you know, like they call it, it's a unique opportunity to go coach with your son, right? How often does that happen? We see, you know, the Shanahans, you know, Kyle's in the Super Bowl. He coached with Mike in Washington. But it doesn't happen very often. It certainly doesn't happen dad work for son, right? Probably happens a lot less than son working for dad. You know, I think of the Turner family. Norv had his son, Scott, working for him when he was coordinator, and Scott was an assistant under him. But, you know, the dynamic of dad working for son is unusual. So I understand why the Browns did it, and it is a loss. Now, like, he might be – Bill Callahan might be the best offensive line coach in the NFL, and the Browns believed that he was, and they said that time and time again. And he had a big impact, and we saw it when the injuries hit this year, and they had the backup tackles, and they performed well enough, right, for this team to win four in a row and get to the playoffs. So I'm not diminishing anything he did or has done. Having said that, I do think, you know, it is an offensive line coach. So it's not like, you know, you're losing your quarterback. It's not like you're losing even your play caller slash head coach. So I think the Browns can recover from this, but it's significant because he is so good at what he does. Now he's getting replaced with Andy Dickerson, who spent the last few years with the Seahawks. He started his NFL career with the Browns under Eric Mangini in 2009. I think he was a defensive quality control coach, then was helped out with the offensive line in his second year. Was only here for 2 years, just like Mangini was only here for 2 years. When I worked with the Rams, was an assistant line coach there. They won a Super Bowl. The Browns, he was actually, as far as you know, the first candidate to interview for the offensive coordinator job. After Alex Van Pelt, they parted ways with Alex Van Pelt. Dickerson was the first interview for the coordinator job. So he's been in the building, you know, a month ago, or it's not quite a month now, but right, like last month in January, he was in the building, interviewed. So the Stefanski had a good feel for him, and I'm sure Andrew Berry also had a good feel for him, and probably in the back of their minds thought, okay, if Brian Callahan gets the job in Tennessee, we could lose Bill. We, you know, we have to have a contingency plan in place, and Dickerson was part of that because he obviously doesn't get the coordinator job that goes to Ken Dorsey. So, you know, could there be a drop-off? Certainly. You just hope it's not significant enough. And I do think it helps that the Browns have a pretty veteran offensive line, right? Outside of DeJuan Jones, you got Petonio, Teller, Posick, Wills, and Jack Conklin. You know, those guys have been around.
Man, great analysis there by you. And, you know, that makes me think back, and I don't want to talk too long about this, but I personalize it. In 2007, actually, yeah, it was 2007 when I started at Channel 3. I was trying to think if I got the call in 2006 or if it was, but it was the spring of 2007. And I had just signed a two-year deal in 2006, at the end of 2006 at ONN, where I previously worked, Ohio News Network, part of WNS, down in Columbus. And I had just signed a two-year deal there. But my dream, Scott, was to always come back to Cleveland and be a sports anchor. I mean, that was it. That was the goal. That, you know, that was it. And I got the call and the offer, you know, hey, would I want to come to Channel 3? And I was like, the phone dropped. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. But then in my head, I'm like, man, I just signed a deal. And TV contracts aren't always the easiest to get out of. And, but you know what? I ended up getting out of the deal, out of the contract. And basically my argument was, this is my dream. Are you going to hold me for my dream? Yeah. Because I will still be, I'll still be professional and work for you, but I'm not going to want to be here knowing I could have been in Cleveland. Like, you don't want someone who doesn't want to be here. So, man, you just really personalized it for me and made a great point.
That's interesting, buddy.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sure that might resonate with a lot of people. So, all right. Tough loss, but like you said, you got to overcome it. So, Scott, moving on now. Anything else on that before we move to Dorsey?
Real quick, according to our buddy Tom Withers, and I haven't confirmed it yet, but I'm sure it's true. They're adding an assistant offensive line coach. His name is Roy Istvan. He was with the
Okay.
Eagles. He was assistant line coach there. He's been around for a long time with 34 years of experience. So he's going to come in. I think it's good, because Dickerson's relatively young. I think he's 42. So to have an experienced guy come in be the assistant, I think that helps. So then so you have Dickerson, now you have Istvan. I don't know if they'll keep a third guy. They had a third guy last year. But, so they have it set, right? And as far as we know, you never know if it finishes the coaching thing because, you could have guys leave. Like, it's not completely set. At to the Super Bowl, you could have a little bit more movement, but it feels like the staff is finally set after, it's been, 3 or 4 weeks of, some turnover, right? Some not turmoil is probably too strong, but certainly turnover, change, maybe some unexpected change. We talked about all the moves. And actually, now I can confirm that Istvan is coming over to do that job. And then, so I think it'll probably settle down now from from the staff standpoint. And now they can focus on, okay, what's next, right? And we'll get into Ken Dorsey here. It's all about meshing ideas and coming together and figuring out how they are going to move forward with what's almost an entirely new offensive staff, right? They keep some of the assistants, like, for instance, Jonathan DeCoster, who was the third on the line coach, right? It's Callahan, Scott Peters, and Jonathan DeCoster. DeCoster's staying with Istvan and Dickerson. And Callie Brownson, I assume she's staying as assistant receivers coach. But Chad O'Shea, the receivers coach, passing game coordinator, he's the only like lead position coach on offense that is going to be back from last year. Now you do have Kevin Stefanski, right? And it's his offense,
Yeah.
and he's a play caller, has been. We'll talk about that. So there is some continuity, but there is a lot of change. So these people have to get in a room, figure out what this offense is going to be, how they're gonna mesh personality-wise, and that's something new because there hadn't been a lot of changeover on the coaching staff.
Yeah, wow, great points there. Yeah, just one coach besides Stefanski. So, Scott, that's breaking news right now on the pod. That just happened.
Within the last half hour. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I was going to
I
say
mean, to confirm within the last 40 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. So, maybe my long drawn out boring thing that no one wanted to hear about my contract in Columbus gave you the time to break some news.
You'll check out
So,
my phone, yeah.
yeah, to look at. So, I thought I was putting you to sleep, so I'm glad to hear that you're working on a story there. But it won't be breaking when people listen to it, but by then they'll have heard, I'm sure. But breaking news on the pod, that's kind of cool. Anyway, so let's get to Ken Dorsey now, and I have four notes written down that I'll toss at you, and obviously you'll throw around what you want. But the first thing, I had to laugh, man, I got perspective when he said, interviewing for this job was like getting a root canal. Really? Because I've had a root canal, and I'll tell you, they're not fun.
I know. I thought that was a pretty kind of honest moment from him, right? And he was buttoned. I thought he was buttoned up. Kind of long answers. Didn't say a ton, but there were some nuggets within his answers, and that was one of them. Like, I think he was asked about the offensive line coach, right, replacing Callahan, and he said his point was it's going to be a thorough process, and this organization's really thorough. And he related to him getting the job, and he compared it to the root canal.
Yeah.
And I didn't get to, I tried to glance over because Kevin Stefanski was sitting to the side to see his reaction. I didn't get a good look at it. But I can see that, right? Like, because Andrew Berry's involved. I assume Paul DePodesta, the chief strategy officer, is involved. Like, all these smart guys, smart people in this building and in the organization. And I think they treat it like a Fortune 500 company, that you're bringing in somebody for a high-level job, which is offensive coordinator is a high-level job. It's not going to be just he sits down with Stefanski, they interview, and he gets a job. And maybe that's how it works in some teams, But that's not how it's going to work here. And I'm sure it's multiple interviews. I'm sure it's deep dives into his background. I'm sure he's on the board designing plays, right? Stuff like that. And I have no doubt that there's multiple people in these interviews and multiple people involved in deciding if he gets a job, right? Now, it's Kevin Stefanski's final call, but it's not all Kevin Stefanski, right? And I think we might have talked about that last week. There's other voices involved there. So I think that's what Dorsey meant. And I thought that was insightful.
The uncomfortable moment of it for when I was listening to it was when I'm not sure who it was asked him, he said, "Oh, Buffalo, that's the first time you've been fired."
And yes, Terry Pluto asked him.
Pluto, yeah. And he was kind of like, "Oh, second time, Carolina fired me."
Yeah, right.
So, there was some, I don't know, it was an interesting presser. It wasn't necessarily boring. I was somewhat entertained by it. You know how pressers sometimes can be boring. He kind of comes across, and maybe this is because he has the glasses on, but, you know, this isn't in a derogatory way, but he kind of comes across kind of nerdy, which I like.
Oh, there's no doubt that's the look. You know, and he played in the NFL, you know, he's a quarterback, all that. But him sitting up there with the glasses and the, you know, the sweater, the quarter zip, whatever it was. Yeah, he looks like an accountant, right? I mean, that's the vibe he gave off sitting up there. There's no doubt about it.
So these are the three things, and I'll just let you go off on them. The three notes I wrote down, number one is calling plays. And obviously, and we know we're going to talk about that. And we already said that we're going to be talking about this all summer long and blah, blah, blah. But Stefanski said, we'll get there. And Dorsey basically said that that's not his main concern. Winning is his main concern. So my number one thing to you is, do you buy that? Do you feel pretty comfortable that regardless if he calls plays, this is a marriage that will work?
I mean, obviously it's too early to tell for sure if it'll work. I think there's reasons to like Ken Dorsey. And we touched on some of those last week. I think he's smart. I like the fact that he played quarterback. I like his experience with Cam Newton and Josh Allen. And they both had their best seasons with Dorsey as quarterback's coach. And the Browns aren't going to hire a quarterback's coach. So Dorsey will have his hands, you know, in that quarterback room extensively, just like Alex Van Pelt did. So I like those parts of it. I believe he and Kevin Stefanski have similar philosophies. Now, what's interesting is I don't think they're completely aligned, and not like in a bad way. I think just they have different, you know, they've done different things in their tenures as coordinators, which means they're going to have to blend that and mesh it. And they talked about tearing the offense to the ground or building it up from the ground, right? And that's going to be interesting. And I wrote a story a couple of days ago, just who knows how much the offense will be different in 2024 versus 2023, even versus 2020 once Stefanski got here, right? And we saw some evolvement in 2023 because it was going to be more RPOs, right? More shotgun, everything you can to maximize Deshaun Watson. And that's going to continue to be a focus of this organization and of this coaching staff, is to make it best suited for Deshaun Watson. And I believe the hope in hiring a guy like Ken Dorsey with his experience with quarterbacks who can run is that translates to Deshaun Watson, right? So, you know, I wouldn't think that we show up in whenever the opener is, September, whatever it's going to be, September 7th, whatever that day is, when they show up, like, I don't think it's going to look completely different, right? I don't think it's going to be five wides and that, but we don't know. We don't know how different it's going to be if they change the cadence, if they change terminology, right? I wouldn't expect them to do that because most of the guys on offense, players are coming back, but I know that those are things that they will discuss, and I'm sure there will be adjustments and, you know, evolution from last year, and it's just going to be, how big is that? How obvious is that? How drastic are those changes, which you can't have when you have a new coordinator? And now when it comes to play calling, right, is this something that's going to drag on to the summer? It might, Chud. It really might. My gut is that if Ken Dorsey drew a line in the sand and said, I will not come here unless I'm calling plays, which he had the right to do, right? He's taking the job. He could have said that. Then we would have an announcement already, right? Now,
yeah.
the fact that we don't, and the fact that Kevin Stefanski, he didn't take questions, but he got up at the podium and introduced Dorsey, said something quick about Callahan, and the departed coaches too. And then he said, hey, we haven't decided. It's only February 5th. So if they haven't decided, you know, and I believe him, right? I believe that they haven't decided. But to me, that means the default is Stefanski continues to call plays, and that he would have to get to a point where he's comfortable enough with Ken Dorsey. Maybe even he sees how Ken Dorsey calls plays in practice, right? Like, he knows how good he is. And I have no doubt that Kevin Stefanski thinks he's a really good play caller. So Ken Dorsey would have to show him something for him to take it, you know, for him to give that duty away. And I right now, and I could be wrong about this, but right now I would bet that Stefanski keeps the play call.
Yeah, I agree. And we've talked about that, but we'll continue to watch it. Second thing is just his relationship with Watson, and can he get him back to being elite? We know he's worked with Cam Newton and Josh Allen.
Yeah, I mean, sure, that was in, you know, we talk so much about the quarterbacks, and, you know, sometimes I think we write too much about them, but that was my story coming out of that news conference was Ken Dorsey talking about Deshaun Watson, because that's so much a key to what 2024 is going to be, right? Is can Deshaun Watson get back to that level? And we talked about it ad nauseum since he got here. Can he get back to that 2020 guy? And he hasn't been. There's been glimpses. He hasn't been on the field enough. There's been inconsistencies. But Dorsey, like, drove that point home time and again. It was, you know, I'm trying to remember some of the words he used. I know he used elite, top of the quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm going to look it up. There's one other word that he used. And just to talk about how good he thinks Deshaun Watson can be. And there's no doubt that his number one priority is getting Deshaun Watson back to that level.
How about the offense as a whole? How did you feel his approach is? I felt like there was a lot of talk about. I felt like besides the play calling and Watson in general, I felt there was a lot of emphasis just about the offense as a whole. How excited he is about the system and the talent that's here.
Yeah, and premier was the other word that I was looking for. He talked about getting, you know, he building on this offense. He talked about the good things in this offense that are already here, right? And I think we know that. And you saw this team win games, right, with four different quarterbacks. But it wasn't great, right? There were struggles with the passing game early. There were struggles with the run game late. And injuries had a lot to do with that. But I believe that Dorsey feels like, hey, with Kevin Stefanski, we can really take off, assuming, you know, I'm sure they think there need to be personnel tweaks, right? Better receiver, better tight end and running back, whatever. But if they collaborate and come together, that they can take this offense to another level. And he mentioned that multiple times. It'll be interesting to see. You know, he talked about the run game, and I thought he gave an answer like Stefanski would give, is, yeah, hey, we had no problem scoring touchdowns running the ball. But we also had to score touchdowns. We don't have any trouble scoring touchdowns passing the ball either, right? Like, so it wasn't, you know, he didn't say, hey, we need to run it 40 times. And Stefanski would never say the same thing either, right? And I think the point of the question was, in Buffalo, they didn't run it as much as the Browns have run it. At least, you know, I think it was in 2022 when he was coordinator. You know, the Browns are always at the top five, top six of the league and running attempts, and the Bills weren't in 2022. And even when he was quarterbacks coach, you remember how it is, Chud. It was, how come the Bills never run the ball, right? So the question was, do you have to run it in this division? You know, and he said, you know, yeah, we want to be able to beat the defenses with every, you know, running, passing, whatever. So, you know, I think that will evolve too. But, yeah, there were some big picture things, and it was all about taking this offense to the next level, because there is plenty of room for this offense to grow.
Well, Scott, I'll tell you, at least this year, we didn't have to deal with the head coaching search, and we haven't had to do that in a while, which is nice because we did it so much. But it is interesting that you have all these coaches changes when you have all these awards that could be won tonight. I mean, the Browns could really take home some hardware when it comes to awards, right?
Yeah, they got four people up. You get Myles Garrett for Defensive Player of the Year, Kevin Stefanski for Coach of the Year. Obviously, he won that in 2020. Jim Schwartz, the Defensive Coordinator for Assistant Coach of the Year, and then Joe Flacco for Comeback Player of the Year. So the honors, I think it starts, we're taping this Thursday morning. It starts Thursday night at 9 in Vegas. And we'll see. We'll see. I think Stefanski and Garrett were the favorite, like the betting favorites at the end of the year. So we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, it's incredible, man. So, you know, that leads me into this. I saw that you put this out and I read it. Good stuff by you. Top moment, worst moment, top player. And I know you did a top five for each. Without going through top five, yeah. You want to just throw out your top moment of the year?
Yeah, I just went with the clinch in the playoffs, the playoff spot, the win against the Jets in prime time. Flacco threw for 296 in the first half. I thought that was the best moment of the year. I thought the worst moment was, you know, a couple weeks later when they go down to Houston, favored to win, and then get blown out by Houston. What a, you know, what a dud of an ending to what was a really fun season. And then my top player, you know, I went with Myles Garrett. I thought he was the best player on this team all year. I don't think they get to the playoffs without Garrett playing as he did. You know, and I do think he should be Defensive Player of the Year. I wrote that, it posted this morning. I think he deserves to be Defensive Player of the Year. There's going to be a big argument out of Pittsburgh if Garrett wins it over TJ Watt. Watt had better numbers, better sack numbers. But I think Garrett is dominant. I thought he's dominant throughout the season, even when those sacks disappeared at the end of the year.
Yeah. I saw your number two was Amari Cooper. I think you had Njoku three. Who'd you have four?
Flacco, kicker, maybe?
Right?
Yeah, Hopkins.
No, Flacco was five.
You're right, Hopkins, and then Flacco. Yep.
Hopkins four, Flacco five. Any thought to any of those other guys being two? Because I'm not disagreeing with Amari Cooper two, but I guess it didn't jump out at me as much as maybe Garrett. And, you know, like, I don't know, maybe I can make an argument that Njoku could have been number two, or that Flacco could have been number two because he kind of saved the Browns.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I would listen to the Flacco argument. You know, there's an argument or case to be made that they don't get to the playoffs without Flacco. I don't quite buy that. I think they might have been able to still get to 9 or 10 wins with, you know, Thompson Robinson or even P.J. Walker. We saw them win a couple games. But, you know, obviously Flacco did it, and he played tremendously, and he gave this team in this town so much inspiration. So I would listen to that argument. I just thought Cooper was more consistent than even Njoku. You know, 1,200 yards, had that huge game in Houston. I just think, you know, I think Cooper's number, like when you look at the pecking order, I think Cooper's one and Njoku's two in the receiving game. So that's why I went with that order. Hopkins obviously was hurt at the end of the year. But the Flacco the Flacco's interesting. I couldn't get around. He only started five games, right? Like, that's what kept holding me back from moving him up that list.
I 100% agree with you that they still would have made the playoffs without him. I think he just made it more convincing and also got him up to the, you know, the top wild card spot, which, you know, I don't know if they would have done that.
Right.
Had it not been for Flacco. And because sometimes you got to just look like what he did in those five games and the way he took over the city. Everyone was talking about him. He brought people in that maybe wasn't even paying attention before. I'm just saying I could argue the Flacco storyline and just what he meant. Probably maybe not Njoku, but I do like Njoku in your top five. But no, I think Amari Cooper is a good number two. I'm not debating it or arguing it. I just, you know, I definitely think that's a good one, but I think there could be some conversation elsewhere.
Sure.
But good solid top five. And real quick, you're because I think everyone would probably have picked the worst moment of the year because, gosh, was that bad. If you took that out, what would the other one be? Would it be Nick Chubb getting hurt?
Yeah, let me look real quick here, Chubb. I think it was.
I think you had Chubb.
I went back and forth. Like I went back and forth on like, is it overall injuries? Is it, you know, like how to characterize that? Right, because I had so many. But I went with Chubb. I just said in a season of serious injuries, the most painful came when Chubb went down. Right, it looked ugly. It was ugly. The, you know, needed two surgeries. whatever. And that just set the stage for what was to come, injury wise.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Hey, I wanted to throw this out at you. Did you? Well, I know you saw. The Eagles in Brazil on Friday night, the opening weekend, and the Browns were one of the teams that play the Eagles on the road. It's an Eagles home game. So, you know, I don't know if it's going to likely to happen or not, but, you know, could the Browns possibly be opening up on Friday night in Brazil?
Yeah, they could. And while we're saying Eagles, I just want to make sure I got this right. It's Roy Isfahan, the assistant line coach they hired, because I tweeted Andy. I got Andy Dickerson and Roy mixed up. So I just want to make sure I said that right. It's Roy Isfahan. Chad, the Browns are certainly – it's a possibility that they could open in Brazil, which is crazy, right? And it's going to be a Friday night game, which they've never had the Thursday, Friday, you know, gone back-to-back, but they're doing it in Brazil. Goodell announced it is – news conference the other day that it is going to be the Eagles hosting that game. And the Browns are going to play on the road against the Eagles, whether it's Philly or whether it's Brazil. You know, and I think if you look at it, and this is everybody, you know, making, surmising things, right, and jumping to conclusions, but it's probably not a division game, so you can eliminate three teams there, right, that they host. I think there's other teams you can eliminate that are already playing an international game next year that you can eliminate. So just from reading people in different, you know, NFL guys and NFL people in different cities, it feels like the three likeliest candidates are Browns, Steelers, Packers. The one reason I think it might not be the Browns, again, this is all conjecture, right? We're all just speculating and trying to figure it out, connect the dots, is – because of the Billy Joel Rod Stewart concert week two in Cleveland, the Browns are likely going to be on the road week two. So will the NFL send them to Brazil and then somewhere else weeks one and weeks two before they play at home week three? Like, that seems like a stretch. It doesn't seem impossible, but it seems like a reason maybe the Browns wouldn't be the choice. Like, they'll open at home, then they'll go on the road week two because they won't be at home for, you know, I think the concert's Friday, so I don't think the Browns are on to play Sunday. And I guess maybe they could play on a Monday night in week two at home, and they could figure that out. But that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. Like, and I saw somebody on Twitter. I can't remember who was on Twitter, some fan, I think. But I think that's a legitimate point, that the way week two is, that could influence week one.
Boy, that's a really good point. But, boy, I'll tell you, I mean, not that the NFL needs to try to get viewership, but would you think maybe they wouldn't go Cowboys, like Eagles Cowboys Friday opening weekend in Brazil?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. I just think they're reluctant to have a division game in a different country. Maybe that's only been in England, right, where they don't want to send both teams. But yeah, I think if you're a Philly fan, you want the Cowboys in Philly, right?
Well, that's a good point. All right. Yeah, you're probably right about that. Yeah, I bet you Packers. Packers would be
– yeah.
That would be a good one, yeah. Okay. Well, good way to sort that out. All right. Anything else before we get to Super Bowl prediction?
I'm trying to talk – we're thinking about all this breaking news, right, with the line coach. Did we mention this – we didn't talk stadium at all, did we? Because there's a report out there that the Browns are going to buy land or have bought land near the airport in Brook Park. And I think the team's going to release a statement. What I've been told is nothing's finalized. The purchase hasn't been finalized, but this could be an option. Is the Browns try to figure out, in connection with the city and the county, what they're going to do with the stadium, right? The lease, I think it runs through 2028. Like, there's something that had to be done with the stadium, whether it's major renovations or a new stadium. It's a part of a big downtown renovation, whatever, right? Like, those are all possibilities. One possibility to add to the pile is the Browns buying a bunch of land near the airport, kind of where those Ford plants used to be. I think it's Snow Road. I've been by it a million times. That's another possibility where if things fall apart with the city or they need a, if it's not going to be downtown, whatever, that could be another site for a stadium. So developing still early on. But that's something that we'll get some conversation throughout the day Thursday. And it probably already has started because there are reports this morning.
Okay, good. Glad you got that in. All right, now are you ready to go Super Bowl?
Let's go Super Bowl.
Do you wish you were in Vegas right now, Scott?
I do, because I love Vegas, and I'd love to cover Super Bowl, and it's got to be insane. I would not like the fact that the blackjack table is probably $50 a hand, so I would not like that. I would like to sit down at a poker table in Vegas, I'll tell you that much. But also, the weather's kind of crappy, so that's a downer. Like, I think it's 50. It might be in the 40s and 50s. There's been some rain. So I don't miss that part, but I would like to be in Vegas. I would always like to be in Vegas.
It's a great. Have you? How many times have you been?
Oh, I don't know. 5, 8, something like that. It's been. I've been there a bunch of times. Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. It's no question. It's a great spot. Have you covered a Super Bowl before?
I have not, and I kind of regret not trying to go to Indy the year it was in Indy, because I might have been able to be credentialed and make it work and do it cheap. But I did not go to that one. So no, I've not been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. You think this is going to be a good one?
I think it's going to be a great one, Chud. Now, I hate to, I kind of hate to get your hopes up, not your hopes in general, your hopes up. But I think they're two really good teams. I think they're two really good teams with flaws, you know? So I don't think, you know, obviously the spread's what, 1.5. I think it's been hanging around 1.5, 2, which is another indication it should be a close game. I think they're fun to watch. I think both the offenses are exciting. I think it's going to be a really good game.
Yeah, I agree. It would be a total letdown if it's not with these two offenses. And I mean, honestly, I think you made a great point. Two great teams with flaws, and they can be exposed, but also greatness on offense. Great players. Real quick before we get to the final score prediction. Yeah. Are you a Purdy fan? I mean, gosh, there's so much talk about the game manager and all that thing. I mean, how do you feel about him?
Yeah, he's won me over. Like, I get, I mean, the game manager talk is interesting, right? And I thought it was really insightful. It was Cam Newton and Dan Patrick talking about it. And he was differentiating between game manager and game changer. And he doesn't think Purdy's a game changer. And I get it, right? Purdy's not a top five quarterback. Now, probably not. Like, if you were picking, and I had this discussion at a bar last night, if you're drafting your quarterbacks, you would not have Purdy in your top five. Having said that, he had a top five quarterback season this year, right? I think he's an MVP finalist. So I think you can look at it both ways. And he's also only in his second year. There's plenty of room to grow. I don't know if he has elite physical traits, but I'm not sure that matters, right? Tom Brady didn't have elite physical traits. So you go down the list. So I am a fan of his. I think how he pulled out those couple of games, the last two playoff games, were hugely important and boosted his stock in my eyes. So, yeah, do I think he could win a Super Bowl and beat Patrick Mahomes? I certainly do. But I don't think it's a knock on Purdy to say. I also think he benefits from having Kyle Shanahan's system and calling the plays and being surrounded by McCaffrey and Debo and Kittles and Juszczyk.
Yeah. All right. Who you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
All right. Lay it on me.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great game. I am not going to pick against Patrick Mahomes for two games in a row. I did it against Baltimore and was burned by it. Yeah, I think we just talked about Purdy. Mahomes is better, right? Like, and it's not all about the quarterback, and we know that, but he's better. He's the best player on this field. He's always the best player on this field. And here's the other matchup I think is important. And it's not like head-to-head matchup. I think perhaps the Niners' greatest strength is Kyle Shanahan is a play caller. I think Andy Reid is a better play caller, right? So you got that. You got the quarterback matchup I like with Mahomes. And I think the Chiefs defense is better. Now, I think the Chiefs defense has some weaknesses, and I think Shanahan's going to exploit those, which means I think we're going to have a bunch of points. But I just like Andy Reid, and I like Patrick Mahomes, and it's why they've already won a couple of Super Bowls. So I got the Chiefs 27-26.
Ooh, 1 point, 27-26. Yeah, you make a lot of great points there. Yeah, I mean, it's tough to argue anything you said, and I'm not going to. I'm right on board with you. And the only difference is that I didn't go against Mahomes last week.
Right.
So other than that, we're on the same page. Because that, well, 2 weeks ago, I should say. But it's just the way it is. I mean, you can't pick against this guy. And just when everyone thought Kelce was maybe losing it or they were down and out towards the end of the year, I mean, look at what Kelce has been doing. Everyone keeps talking, Kittle and Kelce are a wash. I think it's pretty close, but I'm still taking Kelce. So I think that, you know, that's that tight end advantage that the Chiefs have. I think one of their other players on offense will step up. Made a good point with the coaching. Two great coaches. I mean, gosh, two of the best in the NFL, and that's why they're there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not betting against Mahomes. I'm picking the Chiefs to win it again. And I threw a couple scores out in my head. They're all kind of similar. I was kind of dancing around like 26-23, 31-28, somewhere in that area. And you're right there with 27-26. Yeah. Here's what's funny. I have 27 as well. So we both have the Chiefs with 27, but I'm going Chiefs 27, Niners 24.
Okay. I thought about that, and I just went a little weird because, you know, nowadays with the extra points and going for two, right, like things can get – the scores can get weird, right, way weirder than they used to get, which, you know, talking square, right, Super Bowl squares, it brings more people into it. I haven't got my numbers yet. I'm in a couple of those. We can have a missed kick, and we saw Jake Moody, the rookie from Michigan, miss against the Browns, right? The Browns beat the Niners because he missed, I think it was 41-yarder to end the game. I think he missed one last week. I could see another missed kick affecting how this game goes for San Francisco.
Yeah, and that's why I threw 26-23 out there. I'm with you. Yeah. I feel like it could happen, but I feel like every time I do overthink that, it ends up being just a traditional score. So I'm just going to go 27-24 and go with it. But yeah, all right. Well, enjoy the game and. Hopefully we have a good one to talk about, and if you want, we could do that next week.
Yeah, I think we should recap the Super Bowl next week and kind of reset things, Chuck, because by the end of the month, we're going to the Combine. So
I know.
You're right. Stuff's not going to stop. So
Well, we know that.
Right.
And NFL has designed it to where every month something's going on, right, except for basically, what, June?
Exactly. And I think when I probably talked you into doing this years ago, I said, oh, it'll be a bunch of downtime. Well, I lied to you, Chuck.
Yeah, you did. You lied to me.
Yeah, sorry, bud.
That's all right. We'll go out for a beer. We'll have some fun. But it's been a fun year to talk about. And I just can't remember if I made a prediction of who I know who we both put in the Super Bowl. I just can't remember if I made a prediction at the beginning of the year. But regardless of what I did, I'm not going against Mahomes.
Yeah, I hear you. I think I went. God, I think I want Dallas, but I don't even know that. But you got both of them there, so props to you on that.
I'm excited for my daughter. She has, we do the – I think I've talked about this before on here, but I put it on social media. We have the mini helmets, and my wife and two daughters, we all pick out helmets when the playoffs start. And we've started this 10 years ago. She's 13. I think we started 10 or 11 years ago. She's never won it. She's the only one of the four of us. And every year she's – bummed out because we pick a family night out, so she never gets to pick that night out. She got both the Chiefs and Niners this year, so she is officially won.
We're going to Dave and Buster's. Is she going to pick?
I don't know what she'll pick. That's a good question. She's still trying to decide, but it'll be something like that. Something fun, I'm sure.
All right, nice. Well, good for her.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Scott, it's been fun. Judge. Enjoy the game.
Appreciate it, bud. We'll talk to you, everybody. This has been another episode of the Zone Coverage Podcast, and you can listen to all my work, or you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks.